UEG Talks, gastroenterology to go. Welcome to our GI podcast. Listen for fresh insights and perspectives in science, education, and professional development.
Hello, everyone. My name is Agla, and I'm the host of UEG Talks, educational, hopefully fun dive into GI world and beyond. We're happy to have you with us for another exciting episode. So today we're back to school, talking about how to raise pancreatic superstars, everything from mice to knives. And we're split in between Europe. On one hand, it is my utmost pleasure to welcome a pancreatic surgery heroine, a role model to all, warm as master of the Whipple from the cold climates of Finland, Professor Johanna Laukarinen. Welcome, Johanna.
Thank you very much for the kind introduction. It's a great pleasure to be here.
We're very, very happy to have you with us today. And on the other end, I say ciao to a ferocious young general surgeon from the north of Italy, pancreas lover and a UEG Journal trainee editor, Alberto Balduzzi. Ciao, Alberto.
Ciao, Egle. Thank you very much for the nice introduction. It's a great pleasure to be here with you today and discuss this very interesting topic.
Okay, so let's have some fun. Let's dive in. So medicine, to some extent, is still a craftsmanship. And I guess surgery is even more so. There is a principle of see one, do one, teach one. Does a rising pancreatic star need a mentor? And if mentoring doctors are more satisfied and provide better healthcare, why is mentoring not mandatory? Johanna?
Yeah, that is a great question. Well, I think mentoring is needed in all medicine and of course, in all surgery as well. In fact, mentoring is mandatory in surgery in Finland during the training to become a GI surgeon, for example.
So do you have like your official mentor that's assigned to you?
Yes. But that is actually several mentors, like during the course of the training. But then it's another story when training for HPP surgery, because that in more detail, of course, it begins only after specialization. And here I think we would benefit of an HPP like education center accreditation, and when we could use a similar mean of education also in this level as what we are now using for the residents. And this is something where we still are like developing this, at least in Finland.
So it's quite structured in Finland, right?
Yeah, for the residents, yes. Yes, it is.
Okay, good to know. And Alberto, what's your experience? You were fresh out of school. How was it with you and your mentors?
Well, actually, in Italy, we have many differences between different regions. So it's very heterogeneous, the pattern of the university and residency. So in Italy, for example, you have to decide whether you want to focus your interest on a certain topic and try to follow it. And then you will have a mentor, which is going to be the guy who is in chief of that subject. However, as Johanna said, usually we round because you have to see as much as you can during residency, and therefore you have the time to meet and to understand different mentors. However, mentorship is in a certain way mandatory. I mean, is a sort of deontology that you have as a doctor to be a mentor to somebody else. It's very funny because when I think about this question, I also realize that in my final residency thesis, actually, I wrote something to my professor and I told him that the mentor must be very aware that people just under him will actually take him as a mentor, even though he is not officially assigned as such. And therefore, we have to be very wise, because even though if you're not a professor or if you are not in a important recognized position, you are still a mentor to the younger residents. So it's very different, but officially we don't have that kind of role in the university.
Thank you so much for the segue to my next question, because I thought that we grow and acquire knowledge every day from everybody. We learn from our peers, our nurses, superiors, patients. It is inevitable. But if it takes a village to raise a child, how many mentors does it take to raise a pancreatic superstar? Can we learn everything from clinical work, academia, politics, and medicine in general from one person, or do we need a true village to become a superstar? Johanna, could you start?
Yes, we need really a village, of course. And I think from each mentor, you learn something. You see, as a resident, for example, you see different ways of doing things in surgical techniques, but also, for example, in the communication with patients and relatives, communication with, you know, hospital staff, nurses, and so on, with colleagues. And of these, I think then you, as a resident or as a younger doctor, you build the toolbox for yourself and you grow as a doctor, as a surgeon, of course, but also as a human. So yes, I think you do need several mentors, definitely. And I would always recommend also to work in different centers during the residency. That's what our residents, for example, in Finland do. And also to work abroad, of course, if you have the chance, because everything is then, you know, bringing something to your toolbox as you grow to become the best version of yourself as a doctor and as a surgeon.
Yeah, what does it say? That we're the accumulation or average of five people we hang around the most. So you amalgamate everything around you and pick out the best things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alberto, how many mentors do you have in your toolbox?
Many, many, many mentors, absolutely. But not only in medicine, you know, because one of the things that I recall most is that you don't have to build your a singular interest in medicine. You have to develop different also interests. This is something that Claudio Bassi always told me. He was a very big musician and he always wanted to focus in music, even though he is one of the greatest superstar in the pancreatic field. But that's the real treasure of having different interests, different mentors. And mentorship is something that you, as from the student point of view, will try to reach from the others, but you don't have to stop to a single mentor. There's also another aspect, because I've been reading a book about self-experiments of doctors, okay, of physicians. And one of the things that the writer said is that we only report good results. We don't know how many self-experiments were performed with negative outcome. We always report good results from our mentor, but we also understand and learn to actually have examples of things that we would do differently. So mentorship is not only receiving good advices, good examples. We must learn also from the things and the behaviors that we would like to change in the position of the mentors. From the student point of view, we always must be self-aware. We don't have to duplicate, to replicate the things that we see. We have to improve them. Is as with a actually currently with artificial intelligence, right? We have a great tool, but if we use it, it's going to be very flat. We can start from there and we have to improve ourselves thanks to that tool. And mentors is the old way artificial intelligence, meaning that that's the baseline. But as the younger generation, we have to improve them because we can do better.
Okay, we've reached philosophical depths of this podcast episode that we've never been to. So being very pragmatic, Johanna mentioned that their residents rotate through the centers to gain knowledge and different skills. What's your experience? Are residents required to rotate along the centers in Italy?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can choose among different centers. We have a sort of net of centers involved with the university of reference, and you can choose different surgical set where you can actually go to learn and stay, and sometimes even you find the right place where you want to belong to, and you will try to be hired in that place. You can both have different opportunities both in Italy and in Europe or in the United States as well. It depends whether you want to focus on doing stuff so a surgical experience, or if you want to focus more on the research path, so in the United States, for example. But yeah, we do have those periods also because, you know, coming from a very pancreas-focused reality, we need to eat different things because we wouldn't be complete surgeons otherwise. This is very important.
Hey, do not steal my next questions, please.
Sorry.
Okay, so, but being very pragmatic about things, stricter work protection laws have put a cap on work hours in many countries. This resulted in less time in the OR and less experience and consequently many of the graduates feel unprepared for more advanced procedures. Is residency enough to prepare one for what general surgery and especially pancreatic surgery can throw at you? Should we do fellowships afterwards if we want to do some advanced things? What do you think, Johanna?
Oh, yes, absolutely. During the residency, at least in Finland, we are teaching like the basic skills for overall GI surgery. And then like training for HPP surgery, it begins like after you have already reached your specialty in GI surgery.
Okay, so to do a Whipple, you need additional training, right?
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, yes. That starts only after you are already a specialist, at least here.
Okay. And what's the practice in Italy?
Well, actually, before you are able to perform alone as a first surgeon, a Whipple, of course, you will have to be trained in a specific center. For example, we will have dedicated centers in Lombardia. They already exist. And we will see the development of the government decision about it. But of course, it is a high specialty center that must be involved in this kind of surgery. And if you want to become a pancreatic surgeon, you have to scrum with pancreatic surgeons at least an amount of times before you can perform it. Because, you know, otherwise it's going to be, you do one because if you have a good helper, you can do it. It's not that difficult, right? But when you will find yourself alone, it's going to be a real mess if you're not able to deal with the complications or the possible complication within the operation itself. So it is about continuity. We have to develop our surgical skills thanks to continuation. So I don't think that developing fellowship and different experiences, it's going to be worth it if then there is not a plan for you in the place where you would like to be hired. This is the main thing, because you're going to lose that skill that you try to develop in 6 months or 8 months or 1 year abroad. And this is very important. It's like English, the C1 level, it's going to get lost in 5 years, right? If you don't actually train yourself speaking. And the surgery is the same. So I think that you have to develop different skills because during emergency, you will have to deal with many different set of skills. But still, if you want to develop a specific topic, then you will have to practice more and more in time with a specific problem, which is why I believe that the main issue about timing for the student, it's not for the student who will know less, but for the university who will have to develop improved programs and go faster, teaching more to the students. This is the big deal. It's not true that the students must become yes men all the time. Ah, there is an appendectomy. Yes, I will be there even if the shift is done. It's not the right way. Nevertheless, we are surgeons, right? So our job is about opportunity. We cannot have the same program for everyone. So that's the reason why sometimes it is difficult to actually stop and go home to think about something else. But this is back to the previous question, where I believe that thinking about something else is crucial, is essential for your own career.
I totally agree. And if I may add, of course, let's say in a country like Finland, the working hours have been controlled by the working laws. In Finland, we are not able to, you know, stay in the hospital as long as we want. Of course, motivated young surgeons do stay after office hours to be able to, let's say, to see a rare complication operation, for example. And this is, of course, good because to some extent you also need to be dedicated to surgery to become a good surgeon. But I do think that it's good that that we have these working hour laws, and also nowadays doctors take long maternity and paternity leaves. And this, of course, it may like prolong the residency then because you still need to learn the skills. But overall, I think it's not so much like for the time that you should look at, but for the skills and to this like skill-based evaluation in as becoming a surgeon.
Yeah, so again, it's a craftsmanship. You need a certain number of pancreases to get well.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
What was it, the surgical mantra? Eat when you can, sleep when you can, and don't mess with the pancreas.
Yeah,
it is. Is it correct?
yeah, absolutely. But nowadays, we also have the very big issue about open or minimally invasive surgery, right? Which is another very big issue because you will have to learn open surgical procedure before minimally invasive, and the development of that skills require quite a long time. And the programs are really, really behind the timeline, I think, compared to the development of new technologies. So this will become a very big issue in the next 5 to 10 years, I think, for the new generation of surgeons.
And then comes the robots.
Yeah. So we don't need surgeons anymore, you mean?
But I mean, the Da Vinci, the robotic surgery, there's also another layer of surgical skill that you need to acquire if you want to do.
Exactly. That's minimally invasive. That's the part of the laparoscopic and robotic surgical skills that you have to develop. But if you are an old, I would say, surgeon who actually already know how to perform open surgical procedures, you will want to develop your minimally invasive skills. So you won't leave the space to younger ones. At least in Italy, this is how it's going so far. And therefore, the younger will be lost in the open surgical procedures, and they will be developing the minimally invasive skills later in time, which may not really sense, in my opinion. But anyway, you will have to learn both. And learning open surgical pancreatectomy is very, very hard itself. If we even put more procedure in line, the issue it's very big for students.
Okay, the pancreas. And it is quite a niche organ. Still, coming from a macro level of relative risk in IPMN, you can get very, very deep into molecular pathways leading to the risk. And we've touched upon this, but as we go deeper and subspecialize in single organs, do you think that we lose the scope and the entirety of the patient? And in the surgery, you've already mentioned this a bit, could this result in an on-call where the surgeon doing daily liver transplants cannot do a Hartmann? Joanna, what do you think?
Well, this is how it is now in tertiary referral centers. Of course, the surgeon should never lose the scope of the whole patient. But when you are working in that level, when you are very deep to be excellent in one subject, you cannot do that in everything. And I actually don't see this as a negative thing, because I think we need excellent pancreatic surgeons. We need excellent colorectal surgeons, for example. But of course, at least in Finland, to be able to be on call, you need to have good basic skills for all GI surgery. Like, let's say you had this example of doing a Hartmann, for example. So that you should be able to do, of course, this kind of like, you know, acute surgery you need to be able to do. But for most like specialized things, you leave these to the ones who know better. Like HPP surgeon does not perform anterior resection, for example, anymore, but that is performed by the rectal surgeons and preferably with a robotic. So this is how it is in the tertiary referral centers. But this is, of course, something that really affects our education. And we need to sort of like keep in mind that we need to have the good basic skills for a good proportion of the surgeons, because we need to have enough surgeons to be able to be on call as well. Then we specialize to these smaller subjects.
I totally agree with you, Joanna. Actually, it's the same here in Italy. I mean, the specialization is an improvement for patient care. So we should actually be proud of it for the best treatment option for the patient and the best surgical management. So I totally agree. However, Egle, for the first part of your question, you want me to go back a little bit as a philosophical as I was in the beginning. Of course, the patient is the center of our treatment. Sometimes I do wonder if we spend enough time with our patient. When you speak about IPMNs, for example, this is a very, very big dilemma, both for physicians and patients, because it's like having a bomb. We don't know if or when it's going to explode. Or if the patient is going to live along with it without any issue, what to do? It's about the patient sometimes. That's the gray area that we have to deepen, that we have to walk through with the patient itself. So the patient is the big part of it. It's the one who decides whether he wants to go ahead, left, right, or whatever. So we have to consider him. The patient is the center always. When you talk about multidisciplinarity, the multidisciplinarity is not the service of the pathology. It's because they are serving a patient in the completeness of the person, not only about the IPMN.
And also not only IPMN, but the entirety of pancreas and then the entirety of the patient.
Exactly. And that's what we have to look at. We have to look at the completeness of the patient. And we have to take time during the patient consultation when we actually have to take a decision. We have to take it together because otherwise they won't trust us. Or if they trust us too much, they won't react in the way that we expect them to when we perform surgery or procedures before surgery. We have to prepare the patient as for a sport, we have to train them and we have to walk them along the path of the diagnosis and management of the pathology itself.
Could I ask just a very silly question? Because Johanna, you told me that you now only go into OR for very difficult cases, vascular resections, but actually pancreatic surgery is what, I don't know, 2-3 operations with modifications? Does it get ever boring to perform the same thing over and over again?
No, because, you know, pancreas is so special that every operation is different. And you never know what kind of difficulties you're going to head to when you go to the OR. You never know it beforehand, even from the CTs. Every pancreas is and every patient is different. So it certainly doesn't get boring.
You talk about the pancreas as you talk about the lover.
Of course, we are all pancreas lovers here.
Absolutely. Otherwise, it's going to be a real mess if you have to approach pancreas for like 3 to sometimes even 6, 8 hours and you don't love it, it's going to be a bad mess.
Yeah.
Don't mess with the pancreas.
Never.
Okay. So, to be a great doctor in general and to become a pancreatic superstar, do you also need to be a scientist? Do research, besides being up to date on current literature, make us better doctors? What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think that for every doctor, it is beneficial to do at least some scientific research because it broadens your perspective. It teaches you always to look for evidence-based options and to learn to questioning things. I don't think personally that everyone needs to be a high-level scientist necessarily. In a clinic, it's good to have balance, but to do at least some academic research, I think it is really beneficial for any doctor, for any surgeon.
Absolutely agree, totally. Because, you know, medical journals and scientific meetings and different like opportunities during residency, they will help you develop being the critical thinking that sometimes will lead you to behave differently compared to the evidence that you read because you adapt your knowledge to the patient, as we said before. So being able to analyze, but to critically appraise all the scientific publication that we have and resources is crucial for young doctors. It doesn't mean being a high-level statistician or researcher, but still, this is what we base on when we have to compare to different centers and to different outcomes. So it is very important, I agree with you, Anna, to actually know how to read and how to replicate and when to instead do something different because you do question the data available.
Okay, so we do have a consensus. You do need at least some level of research, but then how not to lose motivation in it? Because of course, the research process can be very gratifying and enjoyable, but it takes time from our personal life. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears sometimes bring results years later. And as we accumulate knowledge, each advancement becomes smaller in comparison, and none of us will be versions. How to keep on going in academia?
I think we are coming here back to the love of pancreas. And overall, I think in general, at least for myself, research is like the salt of the work. It is truly inspiring to work with, for example, with the PhD students. And of course, with other professors and other collaborators, they truly become your friends. And once you enjoy it so much, it becomes like a hobby. So you don't mind doing it anymore. Like, you know, let's say after office hours, for example. That's what happens when you enjoy so much something that you're doing.
So you need to find the topic of your passion to keep you motivated, and then everything will fall in place.
Then it's easy to be motivated. That's what I would say.
Okay. And Alberto, how do you keep on going?
Well, it's great to hear that actually some people experience this good feeling about research and about university and being strong about it. And I truly believe and think that we will be able, in Italy at least, to get back to it. However, sometimes as a PhD, because I'm finishing my PhD, I know what Egle is referring about. You always feel like you have to thank, even though you have been the one who made all the work, and you have to follow people, to run, to try to catch them, because they never reply, they will never get back to your emails. So being very pragmatic, as you said before, we must acknowledge that sometimes academia can be very challenging, because if you don't have a well-organized mentor who actually can find the time to dedicate to you his PhD or her PhDs and to the research, then the PhD is going to get lost and he will be demotivated. So the first thing is that you don't have to focus on the finish line. So in my experience, you have to focus on the joy that you experience when you actually find data that you want to analyze and you want to see whether they will lead to a certain outcome. And you discuss it with other colleagues. That's the first thing. The outcome of having the publication done and submitted, that's very static, I think. That's something that leads us to, okay, I want to share my knowledge, what I found, but that's not the main reason why you should do research. Because if you do this kind of path only because you want to have like publication for your CV, that's going to lead you to a very unhappy future. But instead, you have to focus on the subject and you have to find that subject. You have to try to see whether also you will have the mentor who will be able to dedicate the time and the patience and the knowledge that he or she has to you to actually build a person who will be also a reference for that topic, which is very cool also in surgery, right? When you teach something, you will know that, okay, he is going to be able to do it and I'm going to decrease my stress because I can give it to you to make you grow and still work better together.
Okay, so the joy of research. I'm sure I will feel it tomorrow when the deadline for UEG week abstract submission is done. but we somehow have to wrap up. Some people have to submit things. And I was wondering, what's the best advice that you were ever given or you ever received? Johanna?
Well, I'm not sure how well this advice now adds to your situation about the abstract deadline coming tomorrow. But I would like to share with you something that I always tell to my residents. And that is that you need to have a balance in your life. And life is not only work or only research. You need to have time for your family, for friends, for other hobbies, music, sports, whatever it is as well. And especially when the kids are small, research can wait a little while. And I think this is what makes you not only a better human, but also a better doctor and a better surgeon to try to build a balance. This is what I will always advise to my residents.
Okay. Alberto?
Yeah, from my side, I have two very big advice. The first one is, don't feel and never be in a hurry, because this will lead to bad outcomes all the time. Just take time. There is no rush in comparing ourselves to other colleagues, people, whatever. Just take your time, do your stuff, try to focus and enjoy your path. That's it. Don't try to copy anyone. Find your own way to do things. This is the first very big advice that I received that I feel like is helping me out during tough days. The other one is that you have to zoom out sometimes. You have to try to get a distance from what you're looking too near, too close. And working in a hospital environment sometimes make us think that that's the only thing that we do, that we have to do, that we have to dedicate ourselves to. And if we try to zoom out, we see the problems that we thought were huge as smaller, and we can control them, and we can actually improve our management of them. So take time and zoom out. Just relax, it's going to be fine, but yet it's very important not to lose ourselves in comparisons or in something that we think it's a very big issue while it's something that we have just to get distance from.
Thank you so much, Johanna and Alberto. But for the love of pancreas, we have to finish. It was incredible to hear all your thoughts, very interesting ideas from very different points of view, but actually coming back there, for the love of patients, love of pancreas, love of science, and actually taking time to enjoy the journey. So thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
We're very happy for you to have listened to our episode, and we will wait you for the next one. Ciao.